your side. I think this will help cut down that walkie-talkie thing. This is probably going to be a couple weeks long, this talk. So, the first thing we're going to start is we need to discuss some key language. So, let's start with first, emptiness. So in emptiness, there are not these things. Right? Emptiness is referring to, we've talked about this many times, refers to complete, total potential. Using quantum science idea to clarify this. Every decision that we can make, and we'll call, if we make a decision, we call that one. And all the in that moment, the decision that we do not make is called zero. So now we have a one, and we have a zero. So we made this decision, and we did not do this one. So we said yes. We did not say no. So in the yes, that one explodes into a trillion possibilities, all stemming from yes. But the no that we didn't say also explodes into a trillion possibilities of the possibility of having said no. So in any given situation, we have a countless number of possibility, including a whole nother layer of possibility that we didn't even arrive at that point to make the decision. You following me on this? So we've got three massive levels here of just infinite possibility. Okay. When we say emptiness, shunyata is the Sanskrit term. When we say shunyata, that's what he's saying. In shunyata, there is no eye, no ear, no nose. All form is shunyata. Shunyata is form. Okay? That's what he's actually saying if we were to read it in the Sanskrit. What he's saying is all of these potential possibilities that are out there, infinite number of them, before any decisions made, there's all of these infinite numbers. Now, all of that is for one decision. How many decisions do we make in a lifetime? How many do we make in multiple lifetimes? So now we're going to collect all of those possible possibilities and collect all of that, and we will say that is shunyata before anything is even decided or moved. That's big, right? Okay, that is what shunyata means. That's what emptiness means. If we have the direct immediate experience, clear understanding of that maximum potential, that pure state of all of that, And when I mean direct immediate experience, I mean we see that clearly. We have a thing called prajna paramita, perfect wisdom. Paramita is perfection. Prajna is wisdom. Prajna paramita, perfect wisdom. Perfect wisdom means that we clearly know. We know it just like you're sticking your hand over a flame. How many people have burned themselves on anything? Flame, stove, any hot surface. So you have the direct immediate experience that anything hot burns. And you need no description or a qualifier for it. You have the direct experience. When you experience shunyata like that, you have what's called prajna paramita. Anything less than that, we have prajna, wisdom, but not perfected, not paramited. Okay? When he says, bodhisattvas, dwelling in the prajna paramita, they have no hindrance. They're far removed from any perverted thought. What is perverted thought? We have to discuss this. Perverted thought is not negative thinking. That's ridiculous. It's not thinking to yourself, oh, I'd like to steal that car. That's ridiculous example. That's not what perverted thought means. What perverted thought means is when you lose sight of shunyata. Perverted thought means that picking one thing out of that entire countless, limitless potential. You pick one thing and hold that as the only thing that exists. That one out of the countless numbers is the only real one. That's perverted thought. Because you're ignoring all other potential. When you come to a decision, like flipping a coin, and the coin lands, and it just happens that heads is showing, and you say, see this coin? Heads. There is nothing else on the coin, only heads. And you ignore the possibility of tails being on the other side. You ignore the possibility of it having a side with little ridges if it's a quarter. That's perverted. If we think, oh, quarters only have a heads. There are no tails on a quarter. There's no eagle or whatever they put on the other side of a quarter now. It's only this guy. Right? That's a perverted thought. If you flip a coin and you say it only lands heads up because there's only heads, you've wasted the potential that tails could show up. Or those of you that might have been fans of the old Twilight Zone, the potential of it landing on its edge. If anybody remembers that episode, guy flips a coin into a box to buy a newspaper and it lands on its edge. Then he's able to read people's thoughts for the whole time, the whole day. And then when he goes back and he flips another coin, he knocks over the one that was on its edge, and now he can't hear people's thoughts again. That's the episode. But there's that potential. Is it probable? We don't care. Don't get into probability. Probability is another one of those things that is perverted thought. Because potential is just potential. Potential. 500 years ago, if we said we should travel to the moon, probability, zero. Not going to happen. Stupid idea. But the potential is there. There is potential for a human being to get on the moon. And what happens? How long did we say? 500 years ago? Sure. Flash 500 years forward and we're on the moon. That's like 60 years ago. Now we're talking about going to Mars. We've landed the robots on the Mars, driving around picking up dirt. See, potential is always, always there. And potential does not care about probability. It doesn't. Probability is how you limit yourself. Without limitation, everything's possible. It's kind of, hey, somebody else said that. Yeah, Christ talks about that all the time in Christianity. Oh, you want to move a mountain? Fine, just have faith of a mustard seed, you can move a mountain. You want to split rivers in half? You can split rivers in half. There's no problem. And he says it just like that. You want to walk on the water? Watch. And he just jumps out of the boat and walks on the water. Oh, God. If you don't believe in it, I don't really care. Because what he's trying to demonstrate is not that he can work miracles, because there's no such thing as a miracle. He's just showing you what happens when you get rid of probability and work with potential. And he says nothing's impossible. Absolutely nothing. And the Buddhists is the exact same thing. Look, if you understand the Prajnaparamita, then there's absolutely nothing that you're unable to know. That's Shakyamuni's own words. What does that mean? That means if you're in the Prajnaparamita, which we just discussed what that is, myriad of possibility. If that's in front of you, you have no hindrance. You are not hindered by things like thoughts on probability. You recognize potential. There's always potential. And somebody says, well, how's that even going to happen? Who cares? I'll give you one other example, and you've probably heard this from me before. Great master, Paramahansa Yogananda, passed away in 1952. When he came to America, started building his community. The second time, he built it three times. It failed the first time, failed the second time, and then he built it the third time, and that's what's now Self-Realization Fellowship, if you've heard of them. So he's working on this. He's in LA. They have no money. He's completely busted. Zero money. They have two buildings. All their bills are due, and he's supposed to go on another tour across the United States teaching. And the bill collectors are calling. And this is in the late 1920s, early 1930s. So you could go to jail for debt back then. I don't think you can now. I think they just, I don't know what happens. You just go bankrupt, right? But back then, you could go to jail for debt. So he comes into his office one morning, and his secretary, I can't remember what his name is, totally frantic, freaking out, says to him, "Oh, master, we're so busted. Like, we don't even have the money to pay the electricity bill on the building. You've got this tour that's supposed to start in like a week. The collectors are calling. We're going to lose our building. We're going to get kicked out. We're losing everything. And the guy is so worked up, he falls on the ground and is just like, we're in total disaster. Now, this secretary is a monk, so he's thinking, I mean, he's going to be seriously homeless. And Yogananda says to him, get off the ground. Nothing's going to happen. We're fine. What's the matter with you? He goes, what's the matter? Have you seen a bank account? And Yogananda says, quit worrying. I'm going to a meeting. And he leaves. Leaves this guy to have to answer the phone and deal with more collectors all day. So Yogananda goes outside. He's walking down the street. He gets to the corner. He's waiting for the light to change so that he can cross the street. And this old woman appears next to him, walks up next to him. And he says, hello. And she says, hello. And she goes, hey, aren't you that guy that goes around doing all these metaphysical talks? And he says, yeah. Oh, wonderful. Your stuff is so great. I want to make a donation to you. What would you say? Oh, this is great. Wonderful. Or thank you very much. We're in need because we're kind of desperate in our finances. Isn't that our normal response? Guess what he says? Put your checkbook away. I don't need your money. I'm glad the secretary wasn't there. He would have died. He just had a heart attack and fell over. And the woman says, oh, nonsense. I really appreciate the work that you do. And so I want to support you in your work. And so she writes a check and she hands it to him. And he looks at it and it's for $5,000 in 1930. That's what, $50,000 today? And so he takes it, he folds it in half, puts it in his pocket, and says, well, thank you very much, and keeps walking. Later in the day, he comes back, his secretary's totally freaking out. He hands him the check and says, go deposit this. Where did this come from? He goes, it doesn't matter. That's not a miracle. There's nothing happening there. In fact, the whole story has nothing to do with the money. It has nothing to do with his reaction about the money. What it has to do with, and the whole lesson behind this story, is that he does not hinder himself with probability or anything else. He remains in the state of Prajnaparamita. Total potential. And leaves his mind in the rest in that state. Thus, he's liberated from problems. Tactile? Maybe. But he's liberated from actual this problem. The samsara problem, the dukkha problem, the suffering problem is what he's liberated from. Does that mean if you relax into Prajnaparamita that you're going to become a millionaire? I have no idea, but it wouldn't matter. Because most of us want to be a millionaire because we're looking for that to be our refuge. We want $1 million so that we don't suffer anymore. But the $1 million won't end the suffering. What ends our suffering is when we can stop the perverted thought. And thus have no hindrances to resting in shunyata. Okay. Hopefully we clarified two things here. Three. Shunyata, Prajnaparamita, in the term hindrance or perverted thought, corrupted view, mistaken view, all of those are the same thing. We have a prayer, some, I don't know if we do it today or I can't remember where it's from, but be liberated from all mistaken views of reality. Oh yeah, that's in our transforming the mind, right? Mistaken views of reality. That means perverted thought. Just so you know. We're talking about falling back into that state of having Prajnaparamita. Okay. When we are in our natural state, is we are in fact all of that potential. You see, as we're sitting here doing this Dharma practice today, we have selected a few little things out of that myriad number, and we've assembled them together, and we have I. Because I'm male, I'm this thing, I'm that thing, I'm all of these things, which means if I'm this, then I'm not that. You see, we've ruined that whole maximum potential thing. So we've limited ourselves. This is important to understand. If we don't limit ourselves and we truly become one with this unlimited potential, we are said to be in a state of Dharmakaya. Dharmakaya. Kaya means form or body. It actually means form. Rupa means body, like this kind of body. So, kaya is form. That could be mental form, it could be anything. It means something formed. Okay? Now, Dharma in this case, very interesting because it's not what we would normally use. Dharma actually means like the law. Like natural law, the way things are. The natural way. So natural way form is in fact formless. I know, very confusing. Doesn't really matter. Just understand that the Dharmakaya is formless. There is no specific form because there's too many potential. And there can't be one because that is opposed to something else. So Dharmakaya means no opposition. No opposition means no definition. Impossible to define. Wow, what an awesome state. And if we fall into that state, what they call it dropping in, if we drop into the state of Dharmakaya, you vanish. You, as in the lowercase self, the what you think that you are can't exist. It's not there. You become complete total potential. You become one with the all. New Age likes those kinds of terms. When we use it in Buddhism, that's what we would mean. You would become basically total potential with nothing defined. Okay, yes, that can be super scary for those of you that are really clinging to an entity or you want to be you. Yeah, you're going to have problems with the concept of Dharmakaya, but welcome to Buddhism. Because the Buddha says, hey, you know what? If you're not that, you're suffering. Because you want to be the water in the stream. You don't want to be a specific rock in the water. When you're a rock in the water's always punching you in the face. And instead, you want to just flow freely and effortlessly. That's having no form. Okay, so you can grapple with that on your own, because we're not going to spend a lot of time on it. But the way we are going to spend time on it is what happens when you are dwelling in the Prajnaparamita. You're at one with Shunyata, but you're still here walking around. We call that Sambhogakaya. Again, kaya means form, but sambhoga means pleasurable.
Perfected.
Yeah, perfected's okay. You can use that too. It's pleasurable because now you look like this, but you have no hindrance, no fear, no perverted thought, no this, no that, none of the negativity. You're walking around with that Prajnaparamita. Brilliant. That's awesome. The minute you separate yourself from Prajnaparamita, you fall into a category called Nirmanakaya. Again, kaya is form. Nirmana means very ordinary. Exceedingly ordinary. In fact, as far on the opposite spectrum as you can from extraordinary. You're super, super, super far from being extraordinary. You're mundane. Mundane, super mundane, you're way over here. You are so ordinary that trees are trees, cars are cars, you are you. And that state dwells completely and entirely in probability. We don't even want to think about the idea of total potential. That's just ridiculous. We want to be, when you're in the Nirmanakaya state, the secretary in Yogananda's office. Oh my God! Everything is a total disaster. Everything is a huge freaking problem. Oh my God, is my companion going to leave me? Oh my God, can I get this person as my companion? Oh my God, I don't have any money. Oh my God, I've got so much money, they're trying to take it away. Oh my God, my business is failing. Oh my God, I got to start my business, right? Everything is this huge fucking problem. Everything. Oh God, I need a car. Oh my God, my car doesn't work. I mean, the lamas make fun of this all the time. They're like, you know what's really funny is you beg for something, and then when you get it, you will have those problems. When you don't have a car, you have no automotive problems whatsoever. When you get a car, you have automotive problems. Flat tires, they don't work, they run out of gas. There's always a problem. Oh, I rent. I don't own anything. It's so horrible. Then you own a house, and now you own all the problems of the house. Because you can't call a landlord and say, fix my plumbing. Instead, you go, hey, can you fix my plumbing? The plumber goes, yeah, for $10,000. And you go, oh my God, I don't have that kind of money. See? This is what happens. We want the next best thing, but then we get the problems of the next best thing. It's really great. Before I became a monastic, I had my favorite vehicle ever in my entire life, and it's still my dream car, absolute dream car, and no, it's not a Vanquish, even though I joke about that, but it was a 1969 Volkswagen Bug. I still think that was the greatest vehicle on the planet. And whenever it had a problem, I could just open up the back and fix it myself. And one time, we actually pulled the whole motor out. We did it with two people. No hoist, no, I mean, it's that light. It's just made out of aluminum. You just pull it out. Yes, it's heavy, but that you can do it. You can fix everything on it. I didn't have internet back then, so, you know, you had a big book. Oh, you need to fix this thing, and you flip through the book, and it tells you exactly, step by step, with photos, how to do it. Man, that car was awesome. Greatest vehicle I've ever owned. I gave it away to a friend of mine to go into the monastery, come out, and then I start getting, quote-unquote, better cars, nicer cars. Now I have a Subaru. Right? One of these Outbacks. It's pretty new. It's a 2011 or 2012, something like that. One thing goes wrong with it, and you need a whole computer diagnostic. We gotta, like, send it to the Mayo Clinic and have, like, specialists come in and do this whole investigation of this light. Because I open it, and you can't even see anything. And so they're like, oh, yeah, well, here's the problem, which means you're going to hire this specialist to come in, and he's going to have to do this and that. And then there's another specialist that's got to come in to fix that thing. There's no more going down to the auto parts store and saying, yeah, can I get a piece of hose 6 inches long, you know, to fix this one problem? No, nope, can't do that. And in fact, if you fix one thing, you have to fix all these other things. When the belt goes out, oh, that means you got to redo all this, and this got to be readjusted, and it's a nightmare. So the fancier your car, the more expensive the problem. I've got this old Timex watch. When it stops running, you go to Walgreens and you buy a new battery. You unscrew the 4 screws, you put in the new battery, and you screw the 4 screws back on, and it works again. Right? It's awesome. This thing right here, which is a Citizen Eco Drive that runs on solar power, when something goes wrong with it, it's got to go to a watch technician. I can't even work on it myself. I got to pay some guy $150 just to look at what the problem is. Because he's an electrician, some specialist in solar power. What the hell? It's a watch. That lifestyle is what we call near Mauna Kea. Near Mauna Kea is most of us. Shakyamuni Buddha, that's some Bodhgaya guy. Those folks that we can't see at all, that are total potential out there, like quote-unquote God, that's Dharmakaya. When I say God, I'm not talking about any one specific religious God. So throw that out. So these three forms, the three kayas, are called trikaya. Ooh, wow, what a neat name. So now you know another Sanskrit term, trikaya. Means three bodies. They're talking about dharmakaya, formless. They're talking about the pleasure body of being in the state of a form, yet dwelling in prajnaparamita. And they also mean nirmanakaya, this horrific, everything's a huge freaking problem. Form, which is most of us. If you are in Sambhogakaya, I don't know why you're here, because you don't need any Dharma. That's ridiculous. So I'm assuming everybody here is in the near Mauna Kea. Or maybe you're just there to test me to see if I actually give this talk properly. Next week, I'm going to talk about what causes us to go from that formless state that the Buddha says is our natural state What causes us to go from the Dharmakaya and drop down into Nirmanakaya? See, we skipped Sambhoga. Yeah, we went from up here right into hell. That's it. Instantaneous. We're all self-made Satans. Woohoo! Nobody kicked us out of there. We did it ourselves. We just said, you know what? Screw being totally happy in that bliss. I'm going to drop myself down into Nirmanakaya where everything is a huge freaking problem and I have physical problems because I'm so emotionally disturbed that it comes out in my own body. So you can applaud that you sent yourself to this state. Now that you're here, you don't like it anymore. You've had enough of that fun. And you're like, you know what? Hangovers suck. I'm tired of being hungover. How do I stop being hungover? Okay. Let's discuss how we got hungover. And that's what we're going to dive into next week. So we'll learn a couple more terms and we'll learn a couple more concepts on how they're structured. They're very important. And they have to go along with our list that we read today. Okay? Three kayas, prajnaparamita, shunyata, hindrances, and so forth. Those are what you've learned. Know them. Think about that. Don't let those things just, oh, okay, well, tomorrow or next week we get to the real stuff. These are important to understand. Very important. So let's continue with our meditation portion.